This is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I'm here with non-birding Bill.
Hello.
This is going to be kind of a limited podcast because he and I, we both have limited time.
Right.
It's the Fringe Festival. Mm-hmm. I'm freaking out because I have an aquatic invertebrate program tomorrow, and that's outside of my comfort zone.
Well, let's get into the stuff we have to talk about then.
I know, but let me get through this because I want to talk about Bird Fair, and I want to talk about...
No, we need to talk like the Micro Machines guy.
No, we need to talk like the Gilmore Girls.
Oh, Lord. All right. Anyway,
you be Rory and I'll be the mom.
I'm always Rory.
Okay, fine. I'll be Rory and you be the mom.
No, I want to be Rory.
Did you see that? You need to say that way faster.
We.
I wanted to talk about something that we saw Rory Gilmore do, and I can't talk about what we saw because we weren't allowed to see what we saw.
Yeah, boy, it's
that really sounds way dirtier than I thought.
It's really great how we're saving time on this podcast, isn't it? All right, so...
Did you see that Rory Gilmore married Pete Campbell?
Oh, boy.
And that's a big story up here in Minnesota because the guy who plays Pete Campbell from Mad Men is from Minnesota.
Can we get into the actual news here?
Okay, well, no, because I'm freaking out because Bird Fair is coming up. Right. I am leaving for the UK on Wednesday, and I'm freaking out a little bit because I just have a lot to do before I leave, but I'm also excited because I'm going to get to see a lot of people I haven't seen for a long time. I'm going to get to see Bill Oddie, who wrote the foreword to my book 1001 Secrets Every Birder Should Know. I'm going to get to see Bird Blogger on Twitter, who also takes amazing photos of birds, and he's taken some amazing photos of albatross, and he has photos in my book. I love his perspective on photos. Let me just say that. So I'm going to get to see him. I'm going to get to see Dominic and Dave.
Eugene?
Dominic. No, I'm seeing British people. I'm going to get to see all these people that I know. And then the crazy thing is, I know a lot of Americans that are going over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, I want to see you guys too, but this is my chance to see like Jonathan from Israel and all these people from other countries that I don't normally get to see. But... hey, if you are someone who listens to this podcast and you are going to British Bird Fair, I'm going to try and host a Birds and Beers at Bird Fair. And I'm doing it in conjunction with the @drunkbirder on Twitter, a.k.a. John.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be at the Three Crowns in Oakham. And it's going to be on Friday, August 15th at 7 p.m. British time.
Okay. So people can also find this information on your website and on the Facebook page.
I would just trust the Bird Chick Facebook page at this point. And so if you're planning on being at Rutland, and if you are someone who listens to this podcast and like myself, let's meet there because I want to meet as many people at Bird Fair as I can. And I know it's a huge thing. I was looking at one website today that says 20,000 to 30,000 people come to this.
They're not all going to be there, though.
Not all on the same day, but it's over a 3-day period.
No, I mean at Birds and Beers.
No, certainly not. And that's why I'm keeping Birds and Beers. Like, I will just tell you if I run into you at Bird Fair, or we can do it via Facebook. But I'm not expecting the numbers that we get here in North America. But, you know, there's going to be at least 12 people there. But anyway... if this would be a chance for us to connect, because I want to meet people. That's one of the reasons, like, there's one person that I know that's going to be at Bird Fair that also lives in London. Because after I'm done with Bird Fair, I'm going to meet you in London for a few days.
Right.
And we're going to hang out and have fun. And so there have been, like, a couple of people, it's like, yeah, I know Bird Fair is huge, and we're probably not going to see each other because it's just so insanely huge. So let's hang out in London. And you're going to maybe meet this person. I'm so excited.
Sure.
But, so anyway, if you're going to be at Rutland, and if you can make it Friday night at 7 p.m., and if you think that you see someone that looks like me, who's really short and American with blonde hair and glasses, and has a big old donkey Girl Scout laugh, and you're like, I think that's Bird Chick, but I'm not sure I want to talk to her, please come up to me and say, I think I know you online.
I feel that way every single day of my life.
Rabbit, what the hell?
Sorry, our rabbit is...
walking around on the coffee table.
Trying to get attention. I don't know what that was about. All right.
You have banana chips.
We're short of time, so we need to move on.
Okay, but I just want to keep talking about Bird Fair, because Bird Fair is a big deal, and we do have people from outside of the U.S. that listen to this podcast. So if you're going to be at Bird Fair, if you have a booth at Bird Fair, if you have been to Bird Fair before and you think there's something I need to do, if you are a birder that's in London and you think there's something I need to do or non-birding Bill needs to do, please send an email to Sharon@birdchick.com. Sure. Please leave it on the Facebook page or tweet me at birdchick, because I want to meet you if you're a British birder, or if, I shouldn't say British, if you're a birder who is coming to Bird Fair. But, and I just want you to know, if you think you see me and you're like, I don't want to say hi to you, well, if you don't want to say hi to me because you don't like me, please don't. But if you're someone's like, I kind of want to say hi to you, but I don't know if you, I'm totally down with that at Bird Fair. Cause, right. And I say that not to sound full of myself, but I people will send me emails from time to time. It's like, oh, I saw you at this event, but I didn't want to interrupt you. It's like, oh, please interrupt me. I'm totally.
The people she's talking to probably want a chance to escape. All right, let's talk about the news stories.
If I am rubbing the back of my neck, that means I need out of that social situation, and you're doing me...
You really don't want to tell people your signal.
That's not the official signal. Yeah. That's a different... This is... Let's just say that's the bird fair signal.
Yeah.
Because there's also another signal that I use with you. If you see me rubbing the back of my neck at bird fair, you need to rescue me.
You really don't want to tell people that.
I didn't tell them the official one, because there's the other one, the one that I use with you.
Oh, fine, okay. Let's move on to the news.
All right. Anyway, come to Birds and Beards if you can.
You know people... never mind.
I only really use that signal when it's outside of birding events. Mm-hmm. That signal. That one really important signal. And that just usually involves me, like, doing something embarrassing, like putting my finger in my ear. Okay, I wanted to talk more about, speaking of bird fair, how queer I find it that there is a hummingbird on the 10-pound note for the UK when they don't have hummingbirds there. But there's a far more burning story that is going on in the birding community. Right. And it's one of those things, like, I already have the GIF set up. And this woman wrote for the National Geographic, I should say the news.nationalgeographic.com website. And the headline is, "The Perils of Aging... A problem for citizen science?" question mark. And essentially what it's talking about is that someone else, not, let's be clear, not the author of the article, someone else came up with a study that took all the citizen science information and then looked at, when it was provided, the age of the citizen scientists who went out and did bird surveys, and found that if you were over 50... you weren't necessarily as accurate with your birding information as if you were under 50.
Excellent.
And so I saw this, and I got that because a bunch of magazines send me press releases, and it's really funny how they send me press releases. It's like the American Birding Association, or no, not the American Birding, the American Bird Conservancy. They send me kind of like PETA-esque press releases, like just like Chicken Little. Everything is gonna die. This is awful. You need to do this now. This company, and I know it's important that we have all these things because every demographic is different and what, you know, things appeal to them. Birds and Blooms, when they send me articles, it's just like, yeah, that's kind of common knowledge. My readers kind of already know that. But they're really nice about it. It's like, hey, I sent you this press release a couple of days ago. Could you maybe talk about this? But Nat Geo just kind of lays it on the line, and so they're like, hey, you know what? Old birders may not be doing as great as they think. And I looked at this, and I was reading it, and I thought, I would like to link to this article, because I think this article is fascinating about this study that was done where age was provided in citizen science projects about saying, yeah, the older people were not necessarily counting all the birds that younger people were counting. And I thought, how can I present this without pissing off a large segment of the population that listens to this podcast or follows me on Facebook? And then I was like, hey, wait a minute. I'm 10 years away from being 50. So it's like, here we go. In 10 years, I'm going to be obsolete in doing bird surveys.
Yeah, and that's totally what they're saying.
No, but they're just saying that as you get older, sometimes you may not hear things. And this is something that I think about as someone who does bird surveys for the National Park Service. And I also have freelance doing bird surveys. Mm-hmm. And it's something I have been thinking about a lot in the last year as I'm turning 40. Because doing field work, it's hard work. It's not just pulling up to the side of the road and standing outside your car. Don't get me wrong. It's awesome when that's what field work is. But I've had surveys where it's like, you need to walk a mile and a half in rugged terrain. You need to squiggle under electric fences. And I've thought about that. It's like, wow, if I had a significant injury. And there was that time I did have a significant injury, and you came with me on that field work because you was worried I was going to get like maimed or something.
Yep.
But I do think about that field work as a, in general, not in all cases, a young person's game, because you have to be physically fit, You have to have... And so much of doing bird surveys, it's not just being able to see the bird. It is knowing what the bird is by sound. And knowing... And not even just knowing breeding calls, but knowing that, oh, you know what? That sounds like a chick begging for food. You know, I bet they are nesting over there.
Do they draw conclusions as to why this is? Is it, you know, as you get older, your hearing gets less and vision gets... Or is it you just know, like a certain... birders decide, oh, this is what I saw and that's what I saw?
I think, well, there is a certain amount of that. But no, I think overall what it is that you have a decreased ability as you get older. Mm-hmm. I have tinnitus or tinnitus, depending on who you talk to about it. I have a constant ringing in my ear. Ambient noise is my best friend. And I've had my hearing tested. I can still hear all the birds in the sound range, but I know that there's going to be a point, probably when I turn 50, that there are going to be certain bird species that I can't hear. And it's been fascinating to kind of watch the comments that have sprang up with the author's article, because the woman...
Sprang?
Is that a word?
Sprung.
Sprung. So Katie Langan, if my Googling is to be believed, she is, I think she's in her 20s, but I think, you know, she's out of school. but what I found a little bit unfair is that, you know, the initial comments that were coming in was like, well, let me take this young person to task that I still have value. And it's like, she wasn't...
Nope. Off to the glue factory with you.
She wasn't saying that old birders are bad necessarily. She was just pointing out the research.
No, I'm saying that.
That someone else had done that says, hey, you know, your skills may not be as sharp. Right. And I think we can all point to cases that, okay, when you're in your 20s, you have skills. You have incredible vision. You don't, for quite a few of them, they don't need glasses. They have incredible hearing. They see things in a different way.
Let me boil this argument down to its essence.
All right.
It's acuity, physical acuity versus experience.
Yeah.
And it's a trade-off between the two.
It really is a trade-off. And right. But you do get young people out there who have the acuity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've started young enough, they have the experience.
Sure, yeah.
And one of my all-time favorite moments was I was at a bird festival where there was a kid who was like 12. Mm-hmm. And he was a crackerjack birder for his area. Mm-hmm. And in the state that I was in, I'm going to try really hard not to identify anyone as I say this. There was a very accomplished, experienced birder who had arguably the most birds on his list in the state.
Sure.
And he was a fantastic birder, really knew his stuff. And they both were looking at a bird on a large body of water. And the older birder identified it as one particular species. And this 12-year-old kid, I don't know who taught this kid decorum. And he just said...
Probably a birder.
No, it was not a birder. It had to have been his mom. Right. Because if it had been a birder, it's like, you're full of beans, XYZ. This is what this bird is. The kid knew when he looked through the scope that... That is totally not the bird that this very well-respected, more knowledgeable birder just said it was. And he's just like, oh, hey, older birder, would you mind taking a second look at this? Because I see something kind of funny here, and I'm not sure what I'm looking at. The way the 12-year-old did it, it was so smooth. And the older birder looked through the scope and was like, oh, hey, yeah, that was an incorrect ID. This is actually this bird. And I was like... That 12-year-old is going to rule the world one day because he figured out how to, that old guy, like, misidentified that, which happens to everybody.
So what is your take on this study? Do you feel this is accurate?
I feel that there is some validity to this.
Okay.
Based on the number of older birders that I've been out with, you know, and birders who know their stuff and have said things like, boy, I can't wait to hear my first red-winged blackbird of the spring, and it's like, you haven't heard the 20 that have been calling from like 400 yards away. They're already here. Mm. But I think there's a lot of inexperience with youth. What I think this calls for is that maybe let's less rely on citizen science and let's maybe try to get some money for especially some of these government surveys to pay youth a livable wage so they can go out and do these bird surveys and get the experience. And I think this is just a call. Bird surveys are for people with a good, healthful bodies, good acuity, who need to make money.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
You can read this. If you read this as someone who's over 50, I read this as someone who's 40. And I did not read this as an article saying that, well, in 10 years' time, I'm going to be an obsolete dinosaur doing bird surveys.
Basically, your corpse should be left in the woods as a bird feeder.
That is my goal. That is my dream. You told me that. It's not
going to happen.
I know. So don't even tease that. That's not even funny. But this is something that I think everybody should think about when they're doing citizen science. Or if you're someone who's paid to do bird surveys, you are fallible. Yes, you may know that you have a lot of skill. Sure. Yes, you may have been condescended to by an older or even younger birder.
How did they measure this, by the way? How did they find out that old birders suck?
I don't say it that way. They weren't saying old. They were just.
I'm just saying what we all think. Let's just acknowledge the elephant in the room.
No. Because here's the thing. That basically, what this study did was it went through citizen science projects where participants entered in personal information, including their age. Okay. There were a whole bunch of studies where age wasn't even entered into the factor. So for the ones where they knew the age, and so someone would be surveying an area 1 week and they would hear no golden-winged warblers. But when someone under 50 surveyed the same area, they would get 5 golden-winged warblers.
Okay.
And it was this thing of like, oh, someone's wrong here.
Okay, so how did they determine who was wrong?
Well, they would actually go out and see. And
okay, but like, all right, fine. Yeah, this is a whole thing with the deal. All right. Okay.
No, it's. I get really frustrated because there's this whole meme that's going around about how baby boomers are horrible, and it made me crack
up. No one denies that.
No. Bill, that's the greatest generation.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's some of my older sisters because there's a significant age gap between me and my older sisters. But anyway, the one that cracked me up the most was calls millennials lazy and obstinate, yet refuses to learn how to use the internet or their remote control and things like that. There's always going to be a push between youth and age. And I would encourage anyone who's looking at this article and thinking that this is a young woman writing an article to put down old people. I don't think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. I think what this article points out is that no matter what age you are fallible. Right. And you need to accept the fact that if you're a young person, you don't have the experience. Mm-hmm. You may not know everything about birds, even if you can out-hear every person that you know, and you hear sounds that they don't. And if you're an older person with buttloads of experience...
I think what we need to do...
No, let me finish. If you're an old person, if you're a person of a certain age...
An old person.
No, because I'm getting there.
An old person.
Okay, yeah, fine. If you're a person with lots of experience... You need to accept that your abilities are going to dwindle, and that's natural to age, especially if you went to a lot of concerts.
Here's what I think we need to do is give all these old birders those horns to stick in their ear so that they can hear things better. And then when they get super excited and hear jazz music, they can dance around and play it like a horn.
I don't know.
As I saw in cartoons.
I think I'm just feeling a lot of sympathy for the author of the article because I saw, and I generally have a rule of don't read the comments.
Sure.
But I read a couple of the comments and I just saw she was getting a lot of haterade and I was like, I didn't read that she was necessarily saying.
People who are using like F's as S's.
But no, she was just getting, and I sympathized with her because when I started the Bird Tube page early on, every now and then I would get an email from a woman of a certain age. Because my old tagline on the
old person.
No. A woman with a lot of experience. The original tagline on my website was to show the world that you can be a birder without being a geek. And I was very clearly a young woman in a certain type of clothing. Yeah. And they would just like,
that long ago, huh?
It was that long ago, actually. A woman who's not too far from the age I am now.
Right.
Just rip me apart about how she paved the way for me to be able to do what I can do and that I don't know everything and that I should not be degenerating old people. I was like, I'm not degenerating old people. I just had this
denigrating is the word you're looking for.
What am I saying?
Degenerating.
Degenerating. Sorry.
You wish you were a degenerate, which is what you were when you started the blog.
Anyway.
All right, you got me for 20 more minutes. Do you want to continue talking about this, or do you want to move on to the next
story? Read the article. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the person makes some valid points. If you are over 50...
get your niece or nephew to print it out for you, and then you can write out your comments and have them type it into the internet.
I just really sympathize. I just don't take the author of the article to task.
Keep in mind that if you're shaking your cane, people on the internet can't see that. You might want to create a GIF.
I think I'm terrified that when I'm 50, I would read that article and just like, that woman is awful. She's telling me I'm no... She's not saying you're no longer useful. She's just suggesting that your skills might be dwindling.
All right. So, next story.
Can we keep talking about the Viking Stadium, or should we be done with that?
That's fine. We can talk about the Viking
Stadium. Okay, so if you haven't heard, the Minnesota Vikings have been, and I've been talking about this.
We talked about this on the last podcast.
So they have designed a new stadium here in the Twin Cities and they've decided to just use glass, just regular glass. We're not going to use any kind of glass that's not going to harm
birds. Bird-safe glass.
Yeah, they're not going to use birds. Well, the glass that has been recommended that they use isn't even necessarily bird-safe glass. It's designed to be energy efficient. So the Vikings have been keeping mum on it, and then Jim Williams, who writes for the Star Tribune, says, hey, guys, you're yelling at the Vikings, but here's the thing. Even if the Vikings said, yes, we are totally on board with using bird-safe glass, here's a check, let's do this, that would mean nothing, because the group that is assigned to oversee this is the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. And their statement on this is pretty much said, yeah, we hear your concerns. We know Audubon says we're doing this bad thing, but Audubon got into the party late because this plan was in place for a while, and we're not going to change this because we think this design is important to the community. So yeah, no, we're not going to do anything. Here's the crazy thing. Audubon was not involved from the beginning. Audubon, nobody knew about what the stadium was going to look like until a year and a half ago. And when the stadium was debuted, I remember our local football station, KFAN, said, some guy on KFAN, I think it was Dan, what's Dan's last name, Barrio?
I don't know.
I'm bad with the names. Anyway, he said, huh, that stadium's going to kill a lot of birds. This is a guy who's not a birder and recognized all the glass on the Viking stadium, and he's heard enough about birds flying in a window to say, huh, that's going to kill a lot of birds. And I was ready to rally the troops when that design was first out. And so I had contacted Minnesota Audubon and I said, hey, what are we going to do about this? And they're like, hey, don't do anything right now because we're going to try and talk reasonably with the Minnesota Sports Authority Association. And I said, okay, I will lay off on this. And so they had a series of meetings. And then sometime within the last couple of months, the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority is like, yeah, we're not going to do this. So Minnesota Audubon did what any reasonable organization would do, is they contacted anyone and everyone, including National Audubon, to say, this isn't right. If you're a Viking stadium less than 1 mile from the Mississippi River, which is a major migratory corridor.
Right.
And so it's been fantastic. There's been a lot of press about it. I've been on Minnesota Public Radio. Star Tribune's written about it. Mother Jones has written about it. It's been in the New York Times. It's gotten a lot of traction. Last I checked, we had over 60,000 signatures to a petition from National Audubon saying, hey, yo, Vikings, deal with this. So I started encouraging people to write to the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority. And the fascinating thing is, when I gave everybody all the contact information that I got from Jim Williams of the Star Tribune, was that people started saying, yeah, I got this kind of nice statement from this person. And all these people started saying it. And I thought, I've written to everybody on the board of the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority. I'm pretty sure they have a block on my name because no one has responded to me from that organization. So, anyway, there's still time to change it.
So they're just being dicks about it, basically.
Okay, here's the conflict that I have. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Sports Facility Authority is saying, we hear your concerns.
Isn't there a law that they have to, like, do something about this?
There is. They could be sued under that law by the ABC, the American Bird Conservancy, and this is the point in time when I like the American Bird Conservancy. But, and they're also looking at getting LEED certification, which is like the greenest building you can have. And here's the crazy thing. If they switch to this glass, which costs 1/10 of 1% of the overall $1 billion budget for this, they would get a ton of points that they need for LEED certification. Yeah. But they're basically saying at this point, we have this artistic vision. That's and this fritted glass stupid. Doesn't fit with that artistic vision? No, that's vision?
A snow job. There, again, this is, goes back to my theory that this is a whole... They're trying to deflect attention away from the whole Chris Cluey homophobia accusation.
And for those who don't live in Minnesota and know what this is all about, Chris Cluey was our punter.
Yes.
And when we were debating about marriage equality in Minnesota, there was a group of people who tried to make it a state amendment that marriage could only mean between one man and one woman in Minnesota. Right. That got defeated, and then less than a year later, same-sex marriage is legalized in Minnesota,
right.
Which we are on board with. And if you're someone who has a problem with that, this is probably not the podcast for you to listen to, because non-birding Bill and I are down with marriage equality.
I wish I could marry a gay person, but I'm tied to my little boat anchor here.
Yeah, you really...
Forever.
You are so into heterosexuality that you cannot be gay. But anyway, we're fine. We have a lot of friends who are gay.
Anyway.
I just want to... On the off chance someone is on the fence about this, you and I have been married for what, 16 years?
Yeah, approximately.
We had gay people in our wedding.
Yes.
Gay people who are married now, and you were in their wedding ceremony.
I was.
Our marriage is fine.
Yeah. Anyway, so Chris Cluey, who was a punter, came out in favor...
During all of the whole...
The hullabaloo.
Yeah.
Came out in favor of it. He later was released by the Vikings. He claimed that his support of gay marriage had something to do with that. Da-da-da-da-da.
There's also... Here's the more troubling thing. Whether or not he was released from the Vikings for his support of gay marriage, he had several documented incidences of very homophobic behavior by higher-ups at the Vikings. And let me just clarify, because I want to make sure...
I'm trying to skip ahead.
But I want to make sure people know that this just isn't an issue, like a red herring. He had specific instances and charged the Vikings, and the Vikings were like, no, this isn't true, we're going to do our own special investigation. And when the Vikings did that investigation, like, yeah, these people are suspended, but we're going to try and bury that in the press. And so that's why that is going on.
Anyway, all right. So do we have anything further to...
I think we're going to keep going.
No, I mean, you've described it. I mean, what else can people do if they are interested in this issue?
Honestly, I think the only thing... This very cynical side of me thinks that if Chris Cluey came out with, like, here's a whole list of new allegations of all the things that the Vikings did, I think suddenly the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority would say, oh, maybe we should look at putting up bird-friendly glass so we can't see all the bad things that Chris Cluey said were true.
Right. So there's no reason for them not to do it.
There's no reason. They're saying that it's going to interfere with the artistic integrity of the building. And
which is nonsense. It's a stadium.
It's a stadium. Well, okay, here's the thing. The glass that they want to put up is totally see-through. Fritted glass, which would be energy efficient, and 70% of birds tested with fritted glass know to avoid it.
Sure.
You wouldn't have the 100% clear view. And so the Viking Stadium people are saying, we want people in the community to be able to look at the Viking Stadium and see through it and see how it's a part of their community. And I get art.
All nonsense.
I just feel like that's the stupid end of art.
No, that's complete nonsense.
So it's not a budgetary issue because
no, it's a distraction. That's completely a distraction. This is nonsense.
I don't understand why they're not. I think there's...
Nobody looks into. You know what you see when you look into a stadium? You see escalators and walls with pictures of former players.
But that's the crazy thing. I was talking to someone who was looking over the budget, and he said, you know, this week they just added 6 new escalators to the Viking Stadium.
Yeah.
Do you know what that does to the budget? Right. So why can't we just switch to glass that has some dots in it that's not going to kill thousands of birds?
It's complete nonsense.
So they're talking shit. The Vikings are just being dicks about it. But they're saying... But I can see how the board is saying... We pick this artistic vision. We're going to stick with this artistic
vision. No, that makes
sense
if you are an artistic organization. This is a sports organization. All they care about is getting people into the seat to watch the
game. But what if
game.
Someone on the board is, like, really stoked about architecture?
No, this
architecture.
Is complete nonsense. There is no...
I can see how, like, you know, maybe it's Ted Mondale who is on the board saying,
nobody,
no, I'm really down with architects, and this architect says, like, shiny glass is the way to go.
No, nobody wants to see into a building. You know what you see when you see into a building? If it's an office building, you see desks and fluorescent lights.
But here you're going to see the Vikings!
No, you're not going to see the Vikings if you look into the building from the outside.
That's
what... You don't see the field. That's what they want to prevent, is seeing the actual team playing. That's crazy.
What's really frustrating me is the Vikings are arguing like this is an oil company issue. Because oil companies are like, yeah, I know we could do this, but... U.S. Fish and Wildlife isn't making us doing it, and we already have the fines built into our budget, so we're just going to do it our way. And I say that as someone who may or may not have done surveys for oil companies.
I hate professional
But sports. Football, it's like, I get that you're saying, I don't have to do this, so I'm not going to do this, mm-hmm. but the amount that it would cost to change for the glass, as someone on ESPN said, you spend more on jock straps. You spend more on penis protectors.
Right. All right,
so anyway, if you're listening to this podcast, whether you live in North America or not, if you could, like, contact the Vikings and let them know that this is kind of a dick move, that would be fantastic.
All right, what else we got?
I have been doing nothing but talking about Vikings for a while. Okay, so we're going to have to wrap things up, and I have just railed against the Vikings, and I've gone on the story about old people versus young people. Mm-hmm. So let's end on something fun. Further proof in the case that great blue herons would eat us if they could. Someone who has taken a bunch of photos of a great blue heron has annoyingly put them on YouTube. Okay, photographers out there, I just want to beg of you, if you take a series of great photos of birds, please don't put them on YouTube. Just put them in Flickr or even on a Facebook album, because I don't want to sit through your emo video on YouTube with whatever music you've chosen to have to sit through your amazing series of videos. But there is a video that is worth sitting through. It is 3 minutes and 7 seconds, but if you're like me and you don't want to sit through the whole thing, you can easily scroll through. And at about the minute point of the 3-minute video, you can see video footage of this great blue heron eating a carp at Bosque del Pache. And really don't sit through this guy's boring series of photos. We did not.
So are you recommending this or not?
I'm recommending you do this, but I'm recommending that you use your mouse to scroll forward so that way you don't... This guy has made the mistake that I have made myself before, where you think every single photo you take is valuable and awesome, when really all you want to see is that money shot of that great blue heron with this gigantic carp in its mouth. And granted, this guy has quite a few money shots of a carp in a great blue heron's mouth, but really, he could have just shown us 5 photos of the heron going for the carp, the heron struggling with the carp for about 3 photos, and then the 5th photo that demonstrates that the great blue heron has swallowed this carp. I'm thinking this carp is about 12 to 15 pounds, which is double the heron. I can't imagine that this heron flew away with the carp. And I think it's amazing that it took a long time for this great blue heron to eat this carp. And photographer, you took an amazing series of photos, and quite a few of them are in focus. Please, next time you get that amazing series, just post 5 of your best online. That's all we want to see. We really don't want to sit through your 3.7 minutes with emo music.
How many hits does this have?
Let's check that out, because I am just because I linked to it. It only has 13,000.
All right. When did it get posted?
July 16th, 2014.
Okay, so not that long.
But I mean, that's pretty good. In the grand let me clarify. In the grand scheme of YouTube, that's... But, I mean, for a birding video to have that kind of views in that amount of time, that's pretty good.
Well, it also prevents people from stealing his photos.
Okay, here's the thing. You don't have time for
here's the thing. You got 2 minutes left.
Okay, if you don't want people stealing your photos, never put them on the internet ever. No. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. So, this is Bird Chick Podcast number 174. If you have questions for Sharon, you can email her at sharon@birdchick.com or talk to her on Twitter, where she is @birdchick.
Or if you're going to be at Bird Fair this weekend, say, yo, Bird Chick, I have a question. Or, yo, Bird Chick, I want to have Jameson with you.
Yeah. All right. Okay. We will be back later. Bye-bye.